Okay, so Chris, welcome to another Podcast Pal Droid. My name is Russell, and I am with, in Cardiff,
Gareth.
And via Skype in Innsbruck in Austria is...
Leon. Good evening.
Evening, both of you. We might have another guest, though, mightn't we, Leon?
It's very possible.
In fact, there might be another two or three at my end here, actually. I find when the mums go out, they kind of just don't want to go to bed. But Dylan made such a good impression last time, so... You know,
he did. I think he was under the mistaken impression that we were discussing the Bobby Gould years, which possibly explains his distress at the end of our post-Serbia podcast.
We all had a few tantrums in the Gould years.
We'd be waiting till very late at night to do the Gould years, because it's going to be quite X-rated, that one, I think.
People have suggested that we see if Ellis James can come on that, because it might need some light comedy relief on occasions.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
Yeah. Well, listen, Dylan can be the unofficial sort of seventh member of the gang, like Pete Best was the fifth Beatle, and Ian Stewart was it the sixth Rolling Stone. We can bestow that honour on Dylan.
Yeah, he'll be contribute better and make more sense to me in a few years' time, actually.
I couldn't
see if he likes football or not.
Couldn't possibly comment. So we're going to kind of leave on-field matters, and we're going to discuss a couple of things, one of which came out of a chat, an interaction on Twitter with one of our followers, at CCluid. And we started going on about, off the back of our tweet, kind of giving some positive praise for Sam Ricketts having been forced to retire. Internationals who've played for us, but also played in non-league. And he played for, I think it was Telford. And it kind of got us thinking, and as these things do on Twitter, it spirals into everyone trying to get one up. Yeah? So I mentioned Sam Ricketts, but I'm going to raise you a Steve Morrison and the like. And CCluid put an 11 together, which we're going to possibly try to put together ourselves. But criteria now, does playing in the Welsh Premier count as non-league? Because once upon a time I might have just sort of said, well, it's not in the English Football League, but, you know, let's be honest, we have our own league, we are an independent football nation, so I'm of the opinion that it doesn't, and so we can't have Mark Delaney.
I agree.
Right.
If for no other reason,
then we get to do
another podcast about that.
Yeah, exactly. That was you've stolen my thunder. Because if we leave those out, then that's more content for a future podcast. And doesn't alienate hardcore, you know, Bangor City and
absolutely
Carmarthen Town followers.
Well, it's interesting as well, as we can mention players who played for clubs who are now Welsh Premier League, but at the time
were
in the English system.
Yeah,
I've got a couple.
Yeah.
So they were non-league, but now, arguably, they're not, because they're Welsh Premier League.
That works. And then we're going to also discuss, for the simple reason I don't want, Gaz, your research to go to waste, one-cap wonders. But again, I think you have to be clear. You have to have your parameters with these things. I'm a bit OCD about this.
Right.
So, Harry Wilson, for instance, I think isn't a one-cap wonder.
Right.
For me, a one-cap wonder, their time came, but has now passed, and it's not going to happen. They're not going to get that second cap. Whereas Harry Wilson, I suspect, is going to get more caps. Okay?
So what I think that means, then, is that we're not going to include in that... I mean, I looked right up to the present day, and we've got a handful of what you might term current internationals on one cap. So we've got Bradshaw, got Lloyd Igrove, and you've got Owen Von Williams. I think it's a decent bet that any of those three could get another game, as could Harry Wilson, like you mentioned.
What about Jake Taylor as well?
Now, Jake Taylor, does he quite fit? He's one who I suspect his time has gone. I think that brief period where he got in a couple of squads has kind of sunk into very patchy periods of League Two football already. I would be very surprised.
Where is he now, actually?
He's at Exeter still, I believe. I don't think he's played a game this season.
Right.
He played about 16 for Exeter in League Two last season. But he is worth a mention, because if we were allowed to count him as a one-cap wonder, he would be the only one-cap wonder to have won a competitive game. No other player on a single cap has won a competitive match. And he came on I think, for Hal Robson-Kanu against Cyprus at the start of our Euro qualifiers.
That's a good one. So he's the only one to have won a competitive game.
A competitive game. They've been
for his only single cap.
Yeah, in fact, there's as we'll come through, there's about 22, 23, if you include current players, only one cap. And even beyond him, there's only about another three or four who've won a game. We might come to them in a little bit.
Leon, I feel the bar has been set quite high for us quite early on here.
That is a hell of a stat, actually. Yeah.
I was quite pleased with that one.
Fair play to him. It's if he never plays for Wales again, at least he took part in a successful campaign as well. I mean, a guy called Andy Lloyd, changing sports. He played. He was picked for England. He's from Oswestry Street. I'm guessing with a name like that, he probably has a Welsh connection as well. But I played for the same junior cricket club that he did, and sort of Welsh ranked in little village. Very proud of him. He was picked to play against the West Indies in 1984, opening batsman, I think. And he was about 8 not out, something like that. And he got hit on the head by a bouncer from Malcolm Marshall. And he had to retire hurt. He never played for England again. The thing is, he never got out for England. It's almost like an impeccable record because he was forced to retire hurt in his one appearance. So like that Jake Taylor appearance reminds me a little bit of that.
Well, the other sort of on a similar one is like in rugby, isn't it? Ray Chico Hopkins, the Meister Egg scrum half. He was Gareth Edwards' understudy for game after game after game. He made one substitute appearance at Twickenham when Edwards went off injured. Never played for Wales again.
Yeah,
he's got one Wales cap, but he's got two Lions caps because he was, you know, he was the second best scrum half in the British Isles as well.
Yeah,
and Ireland. And Edwards was injured, I think, in the first test, or maybe not even before the first test. And so he played twice for the Lions. So he's got, and there's probably other players who've got more Lions caps than national cap, but he never even started for Wales. And he just had to sit on the bench game after game when, pound for pound, the greatest player of the game was there. So that's a top Jake Taylor stat, and I wasn't aware of that. But I do remember in that campaign, I remember totting up the minutes of players who played, and he still played more minutes than, you know, good four or five other players in the campaign. He played more than Emma Hughes did in that campaign. You know?
Yeah. Beyond competitive games, there's only about another, I think it's four more players who've won in friendly internationals on a single cap. And there's one win. Two of those players played in the same game. So there's one game. I'll see if you can guess what it is. It would be the sort of game from the last 10 to 15 years where you can imagine quite a lot of new players being blocked.
Has Dylan got it already?
Yeah.
Has he beaten us to it?
Oh, was that Trinidad and Tobago, Dylan? Is that what he said? So,
that was Bale's debut, wasn't it?
It was Bale's debut, which perhaps somewhat overshadows some less illustrious debuts.
Well, I know the answer to this because I set it as a quiz question.
Did you?
Yeah. Yeah, because I think there's three players made their debut in that game.
I think four. I think four.
Is it Aaron Davis?
Aaron Davis is one of the one-cap wonders in that game.
And maybe the goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Glyn Garner.
Yeah,
Garner?
Glyn Garner played the second half, who was a one-cap wonder. Jason Brown started the game.
Yes.
And that was his debut as well.
Yeah. Oh, of course. Yes. Yeah,
So two other Welsh players to actually win as a one-cap wonder. Aaron Davis, who he was kind of supposed to be promising, wasn't he? He was kind of a youngster at Southampton, I think.
Mm.
And went to the right Yeovil, but he kind of fell down the division. I think he had a decent move to Forest, but never really.
He's probably contemporary then at Bale then, isn't he?
Yeah.
Because I think he's from Cardiff as well. So there's that Cardiff... Yeah, Southampton connection.
I guess you must remember that,
yeah. Maybe carries Bale's man bag off the coach and things now. That's his full time.
Well, I read that he travelled. He was in the squad Southampton's FA Cup final. He didn't make the bench. He wasn't in like the match day squad, but he travelled with about however many 20 players they had for that game. I think he was he travelled for one of their UEFA Cup ties the following season, but had a loan spell at Barnsley and then went to Yeovil and got his cap while at Yeovil, I think, but never really took off.
That's
much from there.
10 years ago. It's 2006.
Yeah.
It was the weekend of my stag do. And yeah, I think it's fair to say his time's not going to come back, is it?
No.
Because there's a Wilson, right? Now, remember what we said. We did this off. Yeah. Okay. You've got to pretend to be surprised and more impressed than you're going to be now, okay? As impressed you were before we started recording. The other Wilson that Coleman has capped recently is James Wilson, who came on against Belgium in the 1-1 draw. We wore that beautiful half green, half white shirt, away the change shirt. James Collins went off injured, so Gunter was playing in centre back anyway. James Collins went off, and James Wilson came on. And I think they scored from a mistake of his. De Bruyne scored almost within about 5 minutes. He thought, floodgates going to open. And they didn't, and we won. And everyone says, oh, Belgium are in party mood, they qualified. I'm sorry, we finished that with Jazz Richards at right back, Gunter at centre back, James Wilson at centre back, and I think Neil Taylor at left back. And even in a party mood Belgian side, they should be taking that defence to pieces.
Oh, shit.
Tearing to shreds. But James Wilson came on, and I honestly would have not the faintest idea where he is now.
I think at the time as well, sorry Gus, I think Wilson was on loan at Oldham.
He was at Bristol City, but he'd been on a couple of loans, didn't he? Was he at Cheltenham then?
Yeah,
he was actually, it was even worse. His parent club was Oldham, and he was on loan at Cheltenham.
Oh, right, sorry.
Yeah.
I'm confused. Yeah, okay.
Right, but he's at Sheffield United now.
Was he?
Okay. Yeah, he's played 80-odd games for Oldham, moved on to Sheffield United recently. But yeah, he's another one. I'd be surprised if he makes his way back up. Credit to him, though. I think that game, that draw, really, really important in launching the campaign that came along after that. You know, we had a real decent bit of confidence after some terrible results in that campaign.
You can imagine after that game, that's the sort of game where he's calling up the players like James Wilson. And he's thinking, right, I'm going to have to make another phone call to James Chester. And I'm going to have to really pull all the stops out to impress him and all the rest of it. I think it's telling. We had some injuries and pullouts in the last squad, and he called up that Joe Walsh at MK franchise. And he's called him up previously when he was at Crawley. So that's always a decent kind of, I think, barometer for, okay, who are those ones right on the fringes? Then, of course, you've got the likes of Regan Poole and Ethan Ampadu, who's played at centre-back. But, yeah, he's not going to get another cap, surely.
No, I wouldn't have thought so.
Go on, then, who else have you got,
so,
then?
Someone I think you're probably quite keen on, Russ, who also managed to win a game as a one-cap wonder, Stephen Roberts. He played in a 2-0 win over Hungary in 2005, which is first of Toshak's reign. He came on in the last minute for Carl Robinson.
Carl Robinson was in. And my abiding memory of that is he had one touch and he shanked the ball into touch. I mean, like, you know, really shanked it into touch. It wasn't a clearance into touch, which I will forgive in a centre half. It was a sort of, I might sort of see if I can volley, half volley this ball out to the wing, and it just kind of off his shin, and that was it. And I think the whistle was blown about 2 minutes later.
Yeah, he had a very, very short single cap, came on in the 90th minute. He's the joint shortest one cap wonder. I don't know if I think it might be a stretch to ask anyone to guess who the other one is. I'll come to him in a minute. But in that game that Stephen Roberts played against Hungary, that's another one of those kind of really nice lineups to look at when you come across it on Wikipedia or whatever. You've got Partridge making his debut as well. That, I think, is Sam Ricketts' first game, given that we spoke about him earlier. Yeah. And it's also Danny Collins' first cap as well. Might have been better if he was a one-cap wonder. But the only other player to have such a short single cap also has the honour of something we've already mentioned, which is playing with another one-cap wonder in the same game. As Christian Edwards, who played in 1996 against Switzerland, and also playing in that game, Christian Edwards came on for Chris Coleman in the last minute in that game, but also playing that game was Simon Davis, not that one, the other one. who came on for Gareth Taylor, and he was...
That one, not this one.
Not that one, not me. But I can he kind of... That particular cap reminds me of my naivety of being a younger Welsh fan. It must have been a time... I'm sure, what year are we talking there? About 90, 96? And I don't think I'd quite been crushed by the repeated failure by that point. It wasn't that long after we'd kind of failed to get to the World Cup a couple of years earlier. And I must have still felt like, it's coming. Our time is coming really soon. And we've got this new guy. He's at Man United. He was in that youth team with Burton, Beckham and Scholes and all these players. He's come on. He's played in a Champions League game. He played against Galatasaray in a Champions League game. And he thought, oh, here it is. Here's our next diamond, our next player who's going to kick us on to our next level. And before I knew it, he was playing for Luton and then Macclesfield and into obscurity. 11 games for Manchester United before they farmed him out on loan and then sold him permanently. And the only other winning one cap wonder is Ryan Jones, who played in 1994 and we won 2-1 in Estonia. The details of that game are quite sketchy and hard to come by, but also featuring in that game were Adrian Williams. I think that was his debut. It was Jason Bowen's debut, and he's a two-cap wonder if something such a thing exists. And Kerry Hughes of Luton played in that game. That was his fourth cap. So it was a really kind of young team, lots of new caps. Alan Nielsen played in that game. It was his third cap. I'm not sure if they all started. But yeah, we had a kind of glut of players there, and most of them never really quite went on to much else.
Okay, here's one for you. Vic Rouse, 1959. Only won one cap in goal against Northern Ireland. From Swansea. He was playing for Millwall. What distinction does he hold? He was the first player for any country to do what? I'll give you a clue. Millwall were not the top side at this point in time in the late 50s. They're in the old Division 4.
Right, yeah, I can't think.
This is a good one, this is.
Going to have to give it to us.
Yeah, Leon?
No idea.
Yes, got you.
Put us out of our misery.
He was the first player to be capped for any country from the English Division 4.
Ah, fantastic. Good fact.
And it was his only cap. It was only cap. I don't know the circumstances. Jack Kelsey was still been playing, so I can only assume it was a year after the World Cup. I can assume he only would have been injured. But for that 58 World Cup, we named three keepers in the squad, and I think there is a parallel between then and the Euros, where you had an out-and-out, experienced first choice, Kelsey, Hennessy, tons and tons of caps. Mm. The backup had barely a cap between them. Mm. And so at the time in the 58, there was an uncapped guy called, I think, Ken Jones, who never went on to win a cap, but at least he went to Sweden because the other keeper was one of the players who was told to stay at home so all the Blazers could go.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah? And I was Graham Vernicombe. But Vernicombe did go on to win a cap.
Yeah.
I think he had one cap at that time. So he had Kelsey and the two backups shared a cap between them. One never got a cap, but Vernicombe, I think, got a second cap. So those were kind of in the running, that 58, late 50s kind of period. So, but Rouse, obviously, for some reason or other, got a cap. But he was the first player from the old Division 4.
That's very good. Well, goalkeepers are quite...
It's better than very good, but okay.
Okay, I'll go to excellent. goalkeepers quite a rich mine for looking into one-cap wonders because you were kind of alluding to it a little bit there. We've tended to have, haven't we, established number ones over quite long periods of time. So you get a lot of Welsh goalkeepers who've only got two or three caps, even if they've been on the scene for quite a while, or maybe even a single cap. So we mentioned Owen Von Williams... we talked about Garner. Bearing in mind my research only goes back to about the start of my life in 1980, any other goalkeepers you think are one-cap wonders in that time?
Well, the obvious one that comes to mind is Roger Freestone.
Absolutely.
He was at Swansea City. He was coming to the end of his career, really, at Swansea, wasn't he? I think at the time, in 2000, one of Mark Hughes' first games in charge against Brazil in the Millennium Stadium. So, I mean, in front of, 75,000, packed Millennium Stadium, he makes his one international appearance against world champions-to-be in a couple of years' time, who featured, I think, Cafu played in that game, Roberto Carlos and Danielson.
It was a strong team.
Rivaldo didn't, but maybe Rivaldo played.
Rivaldo did. There's a couple of wonderful goals. Cafu definitely plays because he scores like a dip volley where he hits it from one corner, the right-hand side corner of the box, and it kind of dips over. You kind of think when you see it from that angle, you think it dips over into the far corner, and you think, oh, what a goal. Actually, it's a little bit more central, and if I was being really mean to Roger Freestone, I might say perhaps he should have done a bit better with it, but it was just wonderful technique. And then you're right, Danielson and Rivaldo both played because Danielson makes Mark Delaney look like an absolute schoolboy with some tricks on the left and puts in a beautiful cross, which Rivaldo finishes. We certainly made them look like world champions, I think, that day.
Players still talk of Roger Freestone, though, in the same, sort of hushed tones.
I don't doubt it.
I think there's a parallel between Freestone's cap that day and Owen Van Williams's against the Netherlands, albeit maybe Van Williams not quite in as sort of plush surroundings and illustrious opposition, in that I think, and I'm perfectly fine with this, because there's a lot of football these days that is very cynical. Mm. I think those caps are caps that are just kind of given because people have been loyal and they deserve it just for kind of doing their thing and not being any trouble and as a reward for loyalty. And it's that sort of cap version of the Clubman of the Year type thing. And I'm absolutely fine with that.
The truth is, in 2000, just coming off the back of Bobby Gould, and with, you know, Ryan Giggs didn't play for us, we have quite a few players out missing for that team. There was no chance we were ever going to beat or even get a draw against Brazil in that game. If you look at the lineup we had out there that day, I think we had Ewan Roberts played starting for us, which, you know, we had no chance. So I had absolutely no problem, even if he made a couple of mistakes, with Freestone playing in that game at that time. So it was a nice story, really, because, like I say, he was coming to the end of his time with Swansea City, who he played for a long, long time.
But he was 34. He's the oldest of the One Cup Wonders.
Is he?
Yeah.
Okay. There can't be many older debutants.
No, I wouldn't have thought so. I wouldn't have thought so.
I suppose it's easy to forget. He came through, he was at Chelsea for a while. So, you know, he played at a higher level than he tended to with the Swans. Sure. So I think he obviously, as a youngster, he probably had a little bit of, you know, promise and potential. Sure. Which is not to, you know, to say that he didn't have a decent career by any means. Because, sure, I mean, he had, like, you know, hundreds and hundreds. I mean, he's like over 500, maybe 600 caps for the Swans. Sure. And a few goals. Do you remember?
Yeah, two penalties, didn't he? Three in a row, I think it was.
Which is goal-scoring goalkeepers is always a good one.
I would love him to have come up maybe an international game against Chilever for Paraguay or keepers like that. But a lot of Swansea fans, I kind of think of him as a keeper who was maybe playing a little bit beneath his level for a lot of the time he was at Swansea.
But there are others in the 80s, isn't there? So there's Martin Thomas.
Yeah.
My mate Rich, because he's from the same village as him, in the Aber Valley, from St. Genis. Huge Martin Thomas fan. Yeah. You know? But Thomas got his cap, as did a couple of others. Not one cap, one, does admit it. Like Sir Dibble, Tony Norman, got most of their caps because Neville Southall broke his ankle.
Right.
In 86?
He missed the 86 Cup Final, didn't he?
Yeah. That's
which
right,
Everton
it's 86.
Lost,
Martin Thomas's cap is 86.
Had to play in,
that's right,
instead,
yeah. It's 86, definitely. It's early 86. I think he plays the first couple of fixtures of the calendar year, and then the likes of Thomas, Tony Norman, Dibble get their caps.
Martin Thomas played in an away draw against Finland, a 1-1 draw against Finland.
But it's a qualifier.
Yeah, you're right, it is. Yeah.
What about David Felgate?
Nah, he's the kind of first one of the, he's the furthest back of the ones I kind of looked at. David Felgate got a bit of a, poor old David, I feel sorry for him about his Wikipedia page. He's got this kind of Wikipedia bombshell where the first thing it kind of says in there is that he was affectionately nicknamed the fat goalie. which seemed a little bit of a harsh way to start, but he came on for Neville Southall in a game against Romania, 5-0 win against Romania. So I'm going to qualify what I said earlier. There's another one who actually won in as a one cap wonder. He won in a 5-0 win over Romania, but he apparently had been due to make his debut a couple of years earlier. He was going to play in 1981 against Northern Ireland. Any idea, Leon, why that cap didn't happen?
Against Northern Ireland away
in 81, yeah, in the British Home Championship.
Was it something to do with the violence in Northern Ireland at the time?
Yeah, unfortunately that one didn't get finished. It was that, yeah, they played various other games. There had been a game in Scotland, a game at the Vetch, a couple at Wembley, and the last two were England and Wales were both due to play in Northern Ireland. But after Bobby Sands' hunger strike and his death, the troubles picked up and the tournament was abandoned that year. So he eventually goes on to win.
He missed out on a start.
Yeah, and he eventually goes on then to win that cap a couple of years later, and that's kind of how his international career finished. And he goes on to play for loads and loads of different clubs. Then quite a long spell at Bolton, but dropped down the divisions and played for all over the place, right up to about 2005, 2006.
Yeah, still playing. It's interesting with Felgate. I think he was North West Wales, Gwynedd. I'm not quite sure where exactly.
Blaenau Ffestiniog is born.
Okay, Blaenau Ffestiniog, wow. Okay, tiny little village, really, in the middle of Snowdonia. But Rusk went into this in a blog about the curious geography of Welsh goalkeepers.
Yeah.
There's an incredible amount of goalkeepers from the north west of Wales. I mean, Hennessy at the moment, and Felgate, we were just talking about, Tony Roberts, also from Anglesey, Innismon, sorry for that, yeah. Never rich. Yeah, I mean, my theory about it is that it's simply because there's not that much rugby played in the north of Wales, really, and the bigger, crazier kids who can kick the ball a long way out of their hands become goalkeepers rather than rugby players. My theory anyway.
I think you might be onto something there. David Felgate, the highlight of his later career, and bear in mind this is a good 15 years after he plays for Wales. He played for Lee RMI in an FA Cup game against Kevin Keegan's Fulham, and they held him to a 1-1 draw. And Kevin Keegan, that well-known proponent of moderate and objective punditry, said it was the best goalkeeping display he'd ever seen at any level. 38 years old he was at the time. There we are.
Wow.
One cup wonder and Kevin Keegan's greatest ever goalkeeper.
But of course, it's always interesting to wonder how many call-ups did they get? And of course, Wiki and the internet doesn't tend to have that sort of information.
No.
There's one or two reference books out there, but you know, you look at someone like Tony Roberts. He had some like he was in like 30-odd squads.
Yeah, it must have been.
Yeah,
must have been.
Glenn Letheren in the 70s, late 60s and 70s. You know, he was back up to Di Davis, to Gary Spray, Brian Lloyd at Wrexham. You know, never won a cap. He was back up in, you know, for season after season after season, which of course has that parallel, you know, currently with Vaughan Williams.
Yeah, well, I wonder if he has the record for the most squad call-ups before winning a cap. Yeah. I would think it must be, sure.
I mean, I don't know, but I wonder whether Glenn Letheren probably rivals him. But it's probably going to be a keeper, isn't it? Clearly, it'd be a keeper, but
especially the nature of our
goalkeepers, you can't be far off. But yeah, you talk about North Whalian goalkeepers, you know, Zeddy Vinsvicky, you know, but even when you go back in the olden days into the 40s and the 30s and 20s, a lot of them are from, you know, Wrexham, Deeside, Colwyn Bay. There's more than a coincidence. But then there's also a cluster round with the likes of Sprague, Di Davis, Ammanford, Swansea, Llanelli area, that little sort of triangle that's sort of the Lough River.
That's the curious thing,
and that's the thing,
a lot of rugby is played in that area, so maybe the theory kind of falls down a little bit there.
But you know, neither of those regions are the most populous parts. Well, I mean, notwithstanding Swansea and Llanelli, obviously, but I mean, you know, there's only been, I think, three goalkeepers ever capped from Cardiff, and I think it's like four or five caps between them. You know, that's
impressive.
Ever,
that's
which seems sort of strange.
It does.
Roger Freestone, Newport, of course, and there's a couple in Gwent. There's a guy called Bert Gray who won, I think, some like 28 caps in the 20s and 30s, which, bear in mind, they only played about three fixtures a year. That actually takes some doing. That's, you know, quite a consistent period. He's from Tredegar. He is the most capped South East Whalian, and he didn't play again after 1938. So, our neck of the woods, guys, I think it's got to pull its finger on
it really does. I used to like our five-a-side games when we had mats down. I could imagine making an effort to be a goalkeeper then, but I think our time has passed. We'll have to pass on to others.
My time never came in the first place.
As we've talked about Freestone and Christian Edwards, since we're a Welsh football podcast, maybe we should take a minute for any other players who are one-cap wonders whilst they were playing at Welsh clubs. There's another Swan. Anyone know?
Can you give us a clue of the year?
The year would be 1988.
Oh shit, I can't believe I missed this. Alan Neil.
Alan Neil.
Oh, of course.
Who marked Marco van Basten. Yeah, absolutely. His one cap. And played extremely well, even though we lost the game 1-0.
We did.
I mean, the Dutch were the best team on the planet at the time, so fair play to him.
Yeah.
He was so good that night, Alan Neil. I think the result was officially reported as Alan Neil, the Netherlands won. I might be wrong on that.
Very good.
Holland won.
Yeah.
That's
pretty good going, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
That is pretty...
I think that was probably, of all of these players we've talked about, that was probably the most high profile or maybe most significant game. I know Freestone played in front of that huge crowd against Brazil. That was, I think, the first game of that campaign, the qualifiers for the World Cup. Like we are at the start of every campaign, full of hope and optimism and, you know, a big, big significant qualifier. To come in for you, and he started that game. Not many of these players, actually, that we talked about start the games we've discussed. And he started in what was a fairly strong team. And, yeah, only 1-0. Who's had it, I think, got the goal, didn't he?
Yeah. I like Dudley Lewis's only cap. It's against Brazil. So, again, you know, if you're going to win a cap, like Freestone, to a certain extent like Alan Neil, let's do it against illustrious opposition, and you can say that you shared a pitch with the Rivaldos, the Cafus, the Zicos, the Falcaos, the Van Bastens, the Hullits.
There's an interesting thing with Dudley Lewis as well, because I just read about this last night, in fact, because I've just reread Joey Jones' autobiography for about the fourth time. That game in 83, which was finished 1-1, Brian Flynn scored with a header. We had quite a few players missing. I think maybe Kevin Ratcliffe might have been a regular captain already by that point, I'm not sure. But Joey Jones was captain, I think, for the only time in his career. So he shook hands with the great Socrates for Brazil. And he really wanted Socrates' shirt. And he was thinking, like, through the game, oh, should I ask him now? Should I ask him, you know, we'll swap shirts at the end? He was thinking when they shook hands at the beginning, should I swap shirts? It got to the end of the game. He played really well, and he went over to find Socrates to get his shirt, and he found that Dudley Lewis, who'd come on as a sub for his only appearance, had already swapped shirts with Socrates. So Dudley Lewis, fair play to him, one cap, but he's got Socrates' shirt hanging up in his house.
Nice. So yeah, there's one other that I could find from the last 30, 35 years or so, one cap international at a Welsh club, which is Jason Perry.
Yeah, Cardiff City.
And I can remember being in school and talking to friends about that game pretty well. And I think it's around about that time that I really settled into my pessimism around the Welsh football team. Because I can remember going to see Cardiff City a couple of weeks after that game. And the lad I was at Cardiff with, the guy I was in school with, he was commenting on Jason Perry during that game. He said, I feel so much more confident now in how he's going to do for us now that I know he's played for Wales. He's been capped by. So he saw Jason Perry's capping as this kind of positive sign of that this is a top player and that he would go on to be even better for his club. I saw it as just another sign of the depths we were having to sink to fill a team, and that just made me kind of doubt where Welsh football was going from then on. And I think one of us was proved right.
I mean, Perry was unlucky insofar as it was a bit of a disaster that night, wasn't it?
Yeah, an absolute disaster.
And you wonder whether he kind of got caught up in that a little bit. But then, you know, as much of a legend as he is among Cardiff fans...
Oh, yeah, rightly so. I don't mean to diss him in that front.
League Two was about his level.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe League One at an absolute push. But he's got one more cap than we have.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think it was perhaps symptomatic as well of like Toshak's lack of knowledge about Welsh footballers, perhaps, that he'd been in Spain for years before the appointment. He was still living in Spain. He was managing Real Sociedad at the time, was it? Or Deportivo? I can't remember. But it was almost like, okay, who are the Welsh players who are playing for Cardiff City and Swansea City now? I'll call them up. It just sort of smacked a little bit of a lack of knowledge of the whole kind of Welsh football scene, really, to me.
Or a way of ingratiating himself with fans of those clubs to kind of... Because he'd been away for a long time. And he always says he didn't realise the strength of the feeling, to anti-FAW feeling, because of the way they'd handled, you know, the end of Jorist's tenure. But I'm never quite sure if I'd trust Toshak on that one, but... then again, he didn't have a mobile phone until, you know, even you know, the last few years. Right. So this is pre-internet days. So, right. You know, I can probably well believe it in that respect. But yeah, you know, but I mean, it was also Perry, you know, playing at Ninian Park as well, if you remember.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think there's a naivety there on one level, but I think it's also quite a calculated one as well. I think there's an argument for that.
Yeah. Nathan Blake, he'd gone to Sheffield United by then, yeah. But he makes his debut in that game as well, yeah, I think.
Yeah. I've got one for you. This is going way, 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 way back. Eddie Parris in 1931 against Ireland, the distinction of being Wales' first what? You only ever won one cap.
First black player.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. He was born in Pushmeirik, just near Chepstow. So he kind of just makes it on that sort of basis. But yeah, only one cap. And I love this one. This is Alf Pugh, and it's in 1889. And a guy called Jim Traynor from Wrexham, he was Wales' first choice in the late 1880s. He was part of the Preston Invincibles team, you know, regarded as the top keeper in the English league. But Preston wouldn't let him play, as was often the case with Welsh players playing in England. They weren't allowed to play for Wales when because the games would clash with league games. And so the clubs had first call. So Traynor wasn't allowed to play, but the selectors hadn't heard that he was unavailable. And so they'd selected him. And it's literally kind of, it's kick-off and like, well, where's the goalkeeper? So Alf Pugh was called up. He was knocking around the area, around the ground. He was called up, selected. He was playing for Frostutland at the time, which is probably a non-league one as well. And he basically kept the jersey warm for 30 minutes until Sam Gillam came along, who was kind of the player that they actually wanted. So Alf Pugh has one cap, just keeping the jersey warm in 1889 until, like, you know, no, the guy we really want, Alf, if you don't mind, came along. And Scotland were kind of fine with that because this... This is, you know, the game is still codifying, it's still formalising, it's still kind of finding its feet. And I kind of think, well, you know, that is true sort of, you know, good stiff upper lip sort of spirit and grit. I'm going to do that, and that's my 30 minutes only ever I'm going to get. So people have played less, subs, but he has started a game at the very least.
Well, there's not many of the guys that have started. We talked about Thomas and Neil, Ryan Jones, Perry and Freestone. There's only one other guy, one cap one, who started a game. And he'd been on the bench, actually, in 1988 in that game that Alan Neil started. And that's Brian Law, who was briefly at a kind of young player at QPR when he played for us. He played in a 4-2 defeat to Sweden. And 20-year-old Thomas Brolin scored against us twice in that game. But he then, he had a brilliant Wikipedia entry. I really loved reading this about him. It said that his career began with Queen's Park Rangers, played against Sheffield Wednesday at Loftus Road. But he was forced into retirement in 1991 due to a tendon injury. Spent 3 years outside of football on a backpacking trip around the world before returning in 1994 after discovering his injuries were able to withstand the rigours of professional football. Oh, and went on to play 31 games for Wolves and 45 for Millwall before finally retiring in 99. But he played in 1990 for us against Sweden. We lost 4-2.
Mm-hmm. I sort of remember that game.
I think he might have been called up that he came back after his backpacking trip.
Right.
He might have, I think, under Bobby Gould.
That's a shame because I would have liked him to have been the first player to get a cap for Wales, having previously retired from football.
Yeah.
That would be a good question, yeah. Wow. Yeah. What do Dick Hersey, Billy Mays, John Roach, even better, Harry Sabin, Dick Wilcock, Billy Williams, what do they all have in common?
Are they the players who've got one cap and scored?
Yeah. One cap and one goal.
That's right. Do you know, I stumbled across one of them, Mays, I think. Scored against Ireland, did he? They're all quite a long time ago, aren't they? They're kind of most of them are sort of 19th century. Not that they don't deserve a mention as much as anybody else.
John Roach has got one cap and two goals against
good.
Ireland. So you can only imagine he must have said or done something to the selectors, or, you know, taken too much of the after-match buffet or something and offended them, and that was it. Persona non grata after that. That's not bad, is it? You know, a 200% goal to game ratio.
I mean, my guess was going to be that they all sound like sexually transmitted diseases.
Dick Hersey, got a touch of the Dick Herseys. That might actually be right in respect of him. But I remember this in the 80s, Danny Wallace has got one cap and one goal for England. And I can remember thinking, well, hang on a minute. Surely if you score on your debut, you deserve like another shot at it, surely.
Yeah, that's a point.
But David Nugent, I think, is the same as well, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he was at Preston at the time.
Yeah.
Jamie, your mate's going to know this.
Yeah, you'll know it.
I think he was the first Preston player to be called up since Tom Finney or something. And he scored against Andorra, didn't he? Like, it was a scrambled last-minute goal for England to win 3-0 or something.
Whether by the memory of that goal is, I think it's about to be somebody else's. And literally, like, a yard or two from the line, he just wallops it and just nicks it. A couple of other random ones. Cliff Sear. Because, of course, Cliff Sear was always famous because he discovered Ian Rush.
And Wrexham for a long time.
Yeah, and lots of other players.
Joey Jones later on.
Yeah. One only one cap. The other well-known sort of renowned coach, Tom Whalley, from the Whalley brothers. Tom Whalley only won a cap.
Well, I'll look into some of these players a bit more, and I'll try and put them into an 11, maybe for a blog. But we'll also give, before I do that, honourable mentions to other players who might be in the running for a place in that team. We've got Mark Bradley, who came on for Brian Stock against Croatia, 2010. It was Neil Taylor's debut, I think.
That is a substitution that almost defines John Toshack's reign, isn't it?
Well, I think you shouldn't look too closely at stuff like One Cap Wonders, because we've talked a lot, haven't we, about with hindsight, maybe the good work of John Toshack and helping to bring about the new era of Welsh football. But the more you look at things like this, the more it just starts to seem like him throwing names at team sheets until a handful stick. But we've also got David Pipe, rather inglorious character and former sort of Welsh international in against the USA, played in that game after the Serbia game got postponed in the 04 qualifiers. We played that game in the USA, it was disastrous, and we lost Matthew Jones, I think. He gets away a penalty and gets sent off.
That was where it all went wrong for Hughes, really. But we'll talk about this.
I think that's one for another day, isn't it? But he came on for John Oster for the last 20 minutes in that game.
David Vaughan's debut, I think it was.
Well, I think you might be right, yeah.
One or two. You also had the likes of Rhys Day, who was called up for that game, but never got capped, which we covered. And there's another centre-half as well, whose name escapes me. I'm pretty sure there was a couple. Because I think we had about, it was like 16 or 17 pull-outs or something ridiculous, wasn't there?
Yeah, it was bonkers. In our team that day, Matthew Jones played, like you say, Vaughan made his debut. Oster played, Pipe came on, Carl Robinson came on in that game. We were definitely short of a lot of top players. And then
can I just throw in, because I don't know if this is true, but I can imagine it has to be, that Frank Rankmore in 1966 has probably had to flown the furthest for his cap, because his only game was against Chile in Chile, the 1966 tour of South America. I'm pretty sure he also played Brazil on that tour, maybe twice. You're going to take that, aren't you? I mean, that's absolutely. You know, he's probably got more memories and stories and anecdotes than some established internationals have caps.
Absolutely.
Right. So, I mean, I don't know that I've got it in front of me, I've called up on Wiki, and I'm pretty certain that's got to be unchallengeable. No one has flown further for their own cap.
Someone maybe played their one and only game.
Ooh, I know what you're going to say.
Against Brazil in '97, we went over for a friendly.
Yeah.
It was 3-0, I remember.
But Chile's further. Chile's further again, though, isn't it? West Coast, isn't it?
It depends how much you're putting in distance, how much you're putting into distance, how much you're putting into glamour of opposition. You know, it's a bit of a trade-off there, maybe.
No, this is purely based on air miles.
Okay, yeah, Chile.
Also,
Chile,
in,
Chile
19,
takes,
in the early 70s, we did go on a tour of New Zealand and the South Pacific.
And Tahiti. And a lot of players...
Tahiti,
there's players that played on that, but never ended up winning caps.
Uncapped game.
And there is a one-cap wonder. There's Wayne Jones from Bristol Rovers. He went on that tour, but he only went on to win one cap. Arvon Griffiths played on that tour, and at that point he'd only had one cap, because his first cap and the gap between his first and his second cap was quite a while.
That was where he sort of managed to sort of re-establish himself a bit, I think. No, it was maybe perhaps a little bit later when Mike Smith became manager, he decided, you know, this guy should be playing for Wales. But he was like 32 or 33 at the time. 17 caps, 5 goals from midfield. It's a hell of a record. Mm-hmm. You know, the goal which saw us through to a European Championship quarter final in 76. It must be sort of one of the most successful short Wales careers that there's ever been, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's another podcast.
Yeah.
Freddie Eastwood.
Yeah, another one. Yeah, yeah. They didn't burn long, but they burned bright.
Yeah. Paul Marden. Only a narrow defeat in Germany. And Bobby Gould, that was 1995. He was West Brom's Player of the Year. He came on for Steve Jenkins.
And I can remember that game quite vividly. Yeah. I was in university by that point, and I can remember watching it and him coming on, and my mate going, "Who's he?" And I went, "I have not the faintest idea."
No.
To be perfectly honest, though, like in 2008, we played Republic of Ireland in Cardiff. Kuma scored twice. I remember turning to my mate and saying, "Who the hell is that right back playing for us?"
Mm-hmm.
Do you know who it was on debut? No, left back. Left back.
In which year, sorry?
About
Chris Gunter.
Ah, oh, of course, yeah. Of course. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, it was not his debut, sorry, because he played against New Zealand, but I didn't see that game. It was the first time I'd ever seen Chris Gunter. I don't know if he played for Cardiff before that, but I hadn't seen him play for Cardiff.
You don't know
I just didn't have because he went to a clue who he was.
He went to Spurs quite quickly after.
Well, there was a big gap between his first game against New Zealand. We had a flurry of games at the start of that season, and he didn't play in any of them. Then he came in, I think, for Ireland, and then for Germany, something like that. Anyway, and then pretty much from then on, he's only missed in like four games ever. It's almost a ridiculous stat.
Yeah, no.
And still hasn't missed a game under Chris Coleman, which is even more astonishing, I find.
The last one I'm going to chuck in. I promise this is the last one.
Is it a good one?
Are
we ending on a high?
It's sad. Not really. No. In 1992, we drew 1-1 with Austria, and Jeremy Goss was replaced by Jason Rees to win his only cap. That was his debut. It was Lee Nogan's debut as well, but there was a more noteworthy debut in that game. Go on.
I know. Yeah. Well,
go on, Nogan. I'll let you.
Nogan on debut set up Chris Coleman on debut to equalise.
Absolutely, he did.
Yeah.
And there we are.
But who was Jason Rees? Who did he play for?
He played for Luton, I think, mostly. Yeah, from 88 to about 94, he played 80-odd games for Luton. He was there about the same time as Kerry Hughes, and a bit of time at Portsmouth after that, and he was down in non-league by late 90s, early 2000s. Played right up to 2005, actually, non-league. He's the guy who's talking about to Tiverton, Taunton.
And am I right in saying as well, is he like Merthyr?
He's born in Aberdare.
Merthyr, Pembridge was from that area. I think it's Ryan Jones from that area.
There was a scout.
Because Luton,
there was a scout for Luton Town
who
just scouted players from the Merthyr area. It seemed and took a load of them over there, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Pembridge being the most successful by far, but Kerry Hughes was pretty highly rated as a youngster as well. I remember.
Hmm.
Yeah. So, one cap wonders. I mean, you know, you would give your right arm to have that opportunity to win a cap, even if it's for as short a time as Stephen Roberts.
I would trample over my children to be Stephen Roberts and shank a ball into touch in my 1 minute performance.
Or to go all the way to Chile.
Yeah, definitely.
Or to grace a field with Rivaldo and Socrates.
To have Socrates' shirt.
Fantastic.
I would still cut off one of my own fingers to play 1 minute for Wales.
Yeah, one ownership now, yeah. I'm sure there's 11. I think I'll have a look and we'll see if we can get a blog out of it.
We'll stick it up as a blog. I'm going to pin my colours nice. I think it's got to be freestone in goal.
Yeah.
I think it's got to be freestone in goal. And it would have been great if on one of our sort of rare forays into the Brazilian area, you and Roberts get sort of tripped from behind. And in a parallel universe, sort of Mark Hughes sort of says, go on then. Go on then, Rog, you have a go. And he's one of those players that ends on a 100% sort of goal to appearance ratio from goalkeeper.
First one since 1929.
yeah. Okay, fellas, we've spoken for almost an hour on One Cap Wonders. I think we've taken nerdiness to another level. I genuinely think we might actually have outpointlessed the Anglos podcast. So that's mission complete in that respect. We said we're going to do non-league internationals. I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll put it hot there and we will carry on, but we'll put that out as a separate podcast.